Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm Steve Fall, and who's with me today? The Podfather himself, Conrad Thompson. Conrad, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you? Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I am super, and I love your background. Of course, everyone has seen so many different backgrounds you've had, and the championship belts. Mwah, looking lovely.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been my favorite thing to collect in the wrestling space, and I thought, you know, what better way to sort of show them off and bring them as part of the show than right here in the background.
Of course. And now I think everybody who's watching this knows that you're a wrestling fan, but I don't think everyone might know the story of how did you get into wrestling? Was it a family member? Did you channel surf one day?
Yeah, we used to live in Prattville, Alabama. We went to visit my grandfather in Guntersville, Alabama, which is about 2.5 hours away. And back in 1988, every kid had a babysitter named the VCR. So my parents went to the video rental store. They saw the double tape VHS of WrestleMania 4 and said, boy, this will keep him occupied twice as long. So I got to watch WrestleMania 4 on VHS in the summer of 1988, instantly fell in love, thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I was hooked, and I was a super fan, I would say, until 1992. And then it felt like I just sort of grew out of it. And I wasn't watching it all in 93, 94, 95, but I'm flipping through the channels in late 96. And I see Hulk Hogan in WCW, which I didn't know had happened, and wearing all black with two other guys I didn't know, cause I missed all the Diesel and Razor stuff. And ta-da, I was back in and discovered ECW, and the super fandom began again.
That's awesome. Yeah. I remember going to the store with my grandfather, and he'd get his action movies, you know, his Kung Fu movies. And he's like, you can get a couple tapes, and that double stack WrestleMania 4, and people usually crap on WrestleMania 4, but obviously it holds somewhere very close to your heart. Cause if you obviously watched it, but the finishes to each of those matches, it's like DQ, count out, outside interference. It's an endless list of weird finishes, but that is awesome. The double stack, and I guess Titanic also was a double stacked VHS.
Yeah, so, I didn't think about that, but yeah, 10 years later, Titanic was there.
And like you think about, yeah, VHS tapes, they didn't have double stack. Like I have to take this tape out and put a new one in. What is this madness?
So it was a big deal, but you know, it was a tournament concept too. So, you know, I think everybody our age had probably grown up with things like Karate Kid too. So a tournament and the big board, I mean, that was just, hey, this is a movie, but this is real. And of course you realize, well, maybe it's the same kind of movie.
Possibly. Now, you have had a podcast with so many different people, but I think the beginning obviously with Bruce Pritchard, but you now have adfreeshows.com. Now, where did that concept come from? Were people just complaining about your commercials?
Yeah. I mean, that's it. You know, we would have to do surveys for, you know, the various folks who would host our podcast, whether it was Midroll or Westwood One. And so they would want to know more about our audience, because I think a lot of people who are listening to this think that, well, when you do a podcast, you get a report of every person who listens. You don't. You know, we know what type of device, and we know about where you live, like what region or town or what have you, but we don't really know much else. And so this was a fun way for us to dive into who is our audience. And so we learned that, you know, it's 98% male, yada, yada, yada. But one of the things we discovered through this process is who would be the right type of advertiser for our audience. And once we knew that, it was easy to go, you know, figure out what advertisers to find to advertise on the show. And so that worked really, really well. And all of a sudden we went from having almost no commercials to a lot of people were saying we had too many commercials. And as a result, I thought, well, you know, the easiest thing to sell is not, you know, erectile dysfunction pills or meal service delivery. Yeah. The easiest thing to sell is more of us. Why don't we offer a truly commercial free version and sprinkle in some bonus stuff? And when I try to think about bonus stuff, I want to sort of overwhelm them with value. That's always been my sales strategy, right? Like, let's give somebody $100 worth of stuff and ask $50 for it. And I wanted to create those unique experiences that we had done through my convention experience. Like we did something called the eat and greet. So instead of just standing in line and getting a picture and autograph, you get to have a meal with your favorite wrestler for an hour and a half and then get pictures and autograph and the whole thing. And that was hugely successful. So I thought, well, what would be like the digital equivalent of that. And we started in March of 2020, which of course the world knows is when the pandemic started. Now, we didn't know that was going to be the case, but I pitched, hey, we should do interactive Zooms. And we did. And then boy, Zooms just became the way of the world. You and I are talking on a Zoom right now.
Right.
And as a result, now, instead of having to travel and get airfare and a hotel and all that nonsense, to do some sort of a stand in line, here's my item, my Funko Pop, will you sign it for me, Mr. Angle? No, now you can ask Kurt Angle questions like from your house while he's at his house. And it was just a home run. And the other added benefit of ad-free shows is it created what I would call a group of wrestling friends. So I was lucky enough in 2013, I started collecting these silly old championship belts behind me, but there was a hardcore group of wrestling belt collectors that I connected with. And we started like a Twitter DM group. And to this day, I talk to those guys, you know, throughout the day, every day, 7 days a week. And we get to keep up with what's going on in everybody's lives, you know, the ups, the downs, the in-betweens. And I thought, this is pretty cool because in my real life, I have one wrestling friend and that's it. But now with this, it feels like I've got wrestling friends all over the country and it's beyond wrestling. Now it's about life. And I knew that that was something that I wanted to try to create. And I'm thankful that we've done that now with ad-free shows. So everybody, or at least when I was a kid, I had a wrestling friend. And now that I'm an adult, well, that's a little harder to come by. And not everybody, you know, when we were in high school, man, everybody was talking about the NWO or DX, but now as a 40-year-old man, people aren't necessarily talking about that every day at the office, but I get to, because I have my Twitter group chat and now the subscribers of ad-free shows do, because you know, they've spanned this off. They're doing their own podcasts and their own video shows and their own little get togethers that have nothing to do with the organizers of adfreeshows.com. They've just created their own little community. And that was one of the big goals we wanted to achieve.
Outstanding. Yes. The adfreeshows.com, the community, you can clearly see them. You go on your Twitter feed or even type in all your podcast names or you yourself, there's all this positive energy. Of course you will have the normal Twitter comments here and there, crapping on anything you do. You could give them $100. They'd be like, well, why didn't you give me $200?
Right.
So yes, that is a great story about ad-free shows. Because I think everybody wanted to know the origins. I know before, obviously you had the startup with, you know, you had a Ric Flair podcast, obviously, then you had Bruce Pritchard, which by the way, I do miss Mornings Deuce with Bruce. If you remember that, that was on your Facebook page. Yep. And I guess Bruce Pritchard was taking a crap while talking to me very early in the morning. And I appreciate that. Obviously he's too busy now to eat crap. So I don't know. So out of all of your podcast co-hosts, I know obviously you can't say, but can you share with us, do you have a favorite?
Well, I mean, listen, I'd be lying if I didn't say that Bruce Pritchard was right at the top of the list. I mean, before Bruce and I started doing a podcast, Bruce and I were working together. You know, I have a mortgage company here in Alabama and we have expanded and been expanding, and he helped me with a lot of different, you know, projects, video projects, and those were hugely successful. So we got to spend a lot of time with each other. I would say 10 days a month, like in the same household, not like, you know, we see him at the office, but like when he would come into town, he would stay upstairs. He had a whole floor to himself and we got to do our thing. And, we got to a point, especially when we were traveling all over the world doing these live shows, we could finish each other's sentences. He knew how I was going to think and I knew how he was going to think. And in time, you know, I've gotten there, or at least closer with Tony Schiavone and with Eric Bischoff. And now I guess more recently with Jeff Jarrett, but I don't think I'll ever be able to replace the synergy that I've got with Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah. I recently was listening to your Mind Games podcast and I'm assuming he was in your living room with you.
That's right.
A seat away. And I honestly felt the energy, because I knew you were next to each other and you got him to do, you know, a Vince McMahon impression. And I think at least some people probably noticed, if you go back to the archives and listen to Something to Wrestle With, the difference in tone of voice that Bruce Pritchard has used from not being in the WWE to being in the WWE. Now, I know some people don't like the version of Bruce Pritchard they have now. They want the one yelling chocolate titties and all those crazy things. But obviously you haven't seen a wane in views because recently Something Wrestle was the number one podcast again in wrestling. So what do you say to the critics?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, there's no denying that Bruce's responsibilities have changed. You know, the quality of his day-to-day life is different. I mean, I think a lot of people forget that, you know, when Something to Wrestle was really hitting its stride from the beginning, you know, that was Bruce's full-time job. And he did, he made more money being a podcaster than he ever did in professional wrestling. And as a result, all he had to focus on and work on and think about 24/7 was the podcast. So yeah, it was, we had more free time to create more content, not just our show, but you mentioned the Morning Deuce with Bruce and, you know, we were doing live shows nearly every weekend. I mean, I think one year we did over 20 live shows. I mean, so I guess that's every other week, whatever. The point is we were doing a lot of travel, doing a lot of work, and it was all podcast focused. And now, you know, there's no time for him to commit to that. But at the same time, he doesn't want to stop the podcast. He understands the podcast is responsible for him being back where he is now.
Yes.
And a lot of people would argue that he's one of the more influential and or powerful people in wrestling again. And he thinks that is because of the podcast. And a lot of people agree with him that, hey, he was on the outside looking in, but when people got to see Bruce with, as he likes to say, a fresh paint of coat, then he was back in the saddle. And I don't imagine the podcast will ever end, but yeah, it is not nearly the priority it once was. I mean, beforehand, like our favorite ad transition ever, and the one fans still talk about, is on the Jim Cornette episode where we talked about George the Rat. And at the time, one of our biggest sponsors was a mesothelioma attorney. And we came up with that in my office where I said, how did the rat die? Do you know? And he said, I don't know. And I said, well, we got to find a way to. And then I just spun around and I said, I got it. What if the rat got mesothelioma? And he thought it was the funniest thing ever. I mean, howled, couldn't catch his breath laughing. And we knew, man, that's going to be something. So a lot of these early shows, we would put together the format in the same room, do a lot of research. I would say, what about this? What about that? Now we don't have a chance to do that. You know, we sit down, I'm going to ask what I'm going to ask. He hasn't had nearly the same opportunity to be prepared for that show as he would have back then. So it's not just a, hey, he's got to carve off 2 hours. A really good podcast, let me back that up. A great podcast requires preparation on both sides. And we just don't have, he doesn't have the opportunity to do that as much now. But you and I know all good things come to an end. I don't mean the podcast. I mean, eventually, I think he'll be finishing up his WWE thing. Now, I don't know what that looks like, but I just know that as Bruce gets older and he's got this crazy working schedule, eventually he'll say, hey, I need a break. Now, he hasn't communicated to me that that's any sort of imminent plan or anything, but I think a lot of people assume Bruce has been there a few times and this is just the latest time and we'll see what the future holds. But he's having a lot of fun right now, but it is something where he doesn't have any free time.
Well, as long as he does, I guess the only way for him, it seems to leave the WWE would to bring his friend, the Shotgun, to maybe work again. I don't know, you know, but we'll have to see.
I don't think we'll see any reports of any guns at WWE.
No, you don't think so? Okay.
No, I don't think that that'll happen.
Brian Pillman's ghost won't appear. You never know. You never know. But so recently I talked to you recently too, but Jeff Jarrett's angry at you, my friend, and he's angry at the team that does the research. Now, I want a peek around the curtain. Did you used to do the research all by yourself? Well, I guess with Bruce Pritchard as well, but when it was just you and Bruce doing a podcast, were you the one doing all the research? Now, obviously an empire has been built, so you have a team to help you. Was it just you before?
I did all of the research for Bruce and Tony, and then I started with Eric, but I would say very quickly with Eric, like within the first handful of episodes, I was tagged out and we had research support. And at different times, we've had three different folks on the team. And yeah, I think Jeff's still figuring out, you know, how all of this works with us and our system. And, you know, it's obviously evolving and growing. We're trying to branch out into new things. So that was the first time that there's been any sort of, uneasiness or disappointment or hurt feelings or what have you. And I know some people would say, oh, take it out, but I'm of the Howard Stern mindset. Leave it in. It's real. It's authentic. Let's go with it. But I wouldn't necessarily say that he was angry. I would say that he was frustrated. And, you know, I still to this day think that he's wrong. You know, he was upset that we didn't talk about the real life relationship between Jeff and Steve. Well, how the hell can we research that? Is that on Cage Match? Is that on historyofwwe.com? Is that in the archives of the Torch or the Observer? Who has written about the real life relationship, you know, going through the Tennessee and Texas territories between those two? Who's written about what happened on those car rides, those bus trips? Nobody.
Okay.
And so that's not something I can look up. So the notes are for me. And I think that was the first time maybe that actually clicked for Jeff. I have to be informed about the direction of the show and about what we're trying, the story we're trying to tell. And I have to be able to list facts and figures. He doesn't have to. Nobody expects him to remember what the gate was of a show.
Right.
But he is supposed to remember, boy, I remember there was an issue with the fire marshal that day. Well, that wouldn't have been in the Observer unless it was in front of the fans type of thing. So I needed him to just sort of tell his story, and he never sort of shoehorned in, oh man, we were great buddies. We were making towns together and such. But when you go back and you listen to that episode, I talked about when's the first time you met him. Well, it was in, you know, the sportatorium in a training class for Chris Adams. And what'd you think? And so we broke down the very, very beginning, but he never said, oh, and we did this and we did that. But the reality was, to me, what that show was, is about investigating the hurt feelings on Steve Austin's side. And Steve Austin specifically cites the check in Evansville. And Jeff and I off camera, off air had talked about that before. And I asked if it was true. And he said, oh, absolutely. Evansville, Indiana. He told me the whole story. He remembered the town, all that. So I just assumed, hey, he'll throw in what he's got here. And then when he didn't, he was frustrated. And he thought, well, the researchers should have did that. How would we have known? I mean, right. It's not like we had a match rundown of every time they wrestled or tagged together, but is, hey, what'd you think of working with Eric Embry is not relative to the story of the Austin 316 promo and how there was fallout. So either way, it made for fascinating radio, or not, on bad terms. He's on his way to my house as we speak right now.
Oh, nice.
So we can work on some other projects. I guess he's going to meet me at the office, but we're not on bad terms. I had lunch with him yesterday in Nashville, so we're on good terms, but it was a professional frustration. And I thought, why not leave it in? It'll make great radio. When the response online says that that's true.
It is true. It's funny because I've listened to so many episodes that, you know, that sometimes you've listened to so many, they just kind of roll into your brain, but then you start hearing the fights. Like, I'll never forget the time you and Eric Bischoff fought about Sting's tanned body, Starrcade 97. You were yelling and he was upset and you were confused. And I'm glad that you, Conrad, are kind of like the voice of the fans, because with Eric Bischoff, we all felt the same way. You're like, why would this finish is so messed up with Sting and Starrcade? What's going on? This, to me, as an outsider, you're thinking this makes no sense. But when you're in the bubble, I don't know the details of how Sting is operating every day, how Coke Hogan is feeling, how Eric Bischoff is feeling. But the Jeff Jarrett story, the stories that are coming out of the podcast to me are outstanding, because everybody knows the stories of Jeff Jarrett leaving the WWF in, you know, 95 and then what happened with him in Austin. Nobody knows TNA stories because they never really ran rampant over the internet, or no one seemed to care. So I'm very happy that you have Jeff Jarrett allowing us to take a peek into what happened with TNA. And so you talked about what happened with you and Jeff, but do you have a particular episode of any of your podcasts that you go back on and go, man, that was my favorite episode?
You know, that's hard to say. I mean, people still talk about Starrcade 97. You know, I had a lot of fun with Tony Schiavone on Halloween Havoc 95. And, you know, Bruce Pritchard and I have had so many fun ones. I think, you know, the one about WWE CW was great. The one about Sonny was great. The one about Jim Cornette was great. Maybe one of the first more detailed ones we did was about Vader. And then there was one about Pillman. That's when I really started to double down on research, and fans still love to this day, the Houston wrestling episode. And we've got a big Mid-South episode coming up soon. And that's going to be less on research and more on Bruce telling stories. But I also don't hate when Bruce gets to talk about his friends, you know, when he talked about Roddy Piper and, you know, got emotional at the end, or he talked about Mr. Perfect, or
the Bobby Heenan episode I thought was outstanding.
Bobby Heenan, Mean Gene. I mean, there's been so many special ones. It's really hard for me to identify one single one. I mean, I would say on the Jeff Jarrett side, just because it's fresh in my mind, there were two episodes that stand out above all the others to me. The talking about the debut on Monday night, and how he was a minority owner, which basically means he was an employee with a bonus, but just breaking down all the politics of professional wrestling with one of the owners of a company at the time, the number two company, was really special. But I think the Owen Hart episode that we did with Jeff Jarrett is perhaps the most real piece of audio I've ever recorded. I don't think a lot of people know that when Owen fell, one person from the WWE went to the hospital, and it was Jeff Jarrett after the match. So he's there in the ER in his gear right after wrestling on the pay-per-view. And as he was wrestling the match, he could feel beneath his feet where the boards had broken, where Owen had fallen, and just processing all of that. And then through his sobriety, he's learned that he just never really dealt with it, and only dealt with it in the last 4 years, because it was time to make a town, pack a suitcase, you know, go to the funeral and then pack a suitcase and we're back wrestling again. And he never really dealt with it. And I just, that was such a unique story about a friendship and life and the wrestling business and entertainment and perseverance. It wasn't a wrestling podcast. I don't know what it was, but it was unbelievable.
Yeah. I do agree on that one. That was an emotional episode just to listen to in general. Though the question I remember asking was like, favorite episode. One of mine is it was the Thanksgiving, I think, Survivor Series episode with you and Bruce. And you said, what would it be like at the WWF dinner table for Thanksgiving? And you kept throwing out names, and Bruce would do an impression. So we're all at the dinner table. It's like Macho Man, Dusty, Jim Cornette. It's a tail end of an episode. I think it might've been when you guys were doing your Survivor Series anniversaries on the actual, on Thanksgiving watch alongs. And oh my God, I remember just being in tears. I had to like pull over the car. Like, I don't want to kill anybody today.
Good old days, man.
So, you know, you have Bruce, you have Kurt Angle, you have all these people, but dead or alive, who would be your dream podcast co-host?
Dusty Rhodes or Bobby Heenan in a tie. I mean, I think either one of those guys would have been tremendous. You know, there's a saying, Dusty never let the truth get in the way of a good story, but what a storyteller he was, and his delivery and his ability to just manipulate the English language.
Oh yeah.
Second to none. But then Bobby Heenan's wit and timing. I mean, it would be perhaps the first ever, well, I guess there are other ones out there like Wrestle Roast, but a comedic podcast for real, like a wrestling comedy podcast. And I know, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have some funny moments, but man, it just feels like when Bobby Heenan saw the red light, there was nobody better. And then you get to talk to people who knew him. He didn't need a red light. He was just that way all the time. So Bobby Heenan's got to be at the top of the list.
Yeah. Again, like you just said, that his timing, like if you want to watch an old episode of WWF Superstars on Peacock and you don't really want to watch it, just listen to the commentary of the, doesn't matter. It's like, oh, it's Demolition versus two people you never heard of, but Bobby Heenan's on commentary. And it's outstanding. So let's move on from podcasting for a little bit. The current wrestling landscape is growing every day, and there is a war between fans, between wrestlers, between owners. WWE, AEW, Impact Wrestling, it's just endless content. How do you feel about this, like the AEW WWE war that's going on, where people are just grabbing onto any inch to say I beat you or you beat me?
I think it's a little silly. You know, I enjoy AEW. I enjoy watching the AEW product more than I enjoy watching the WWE product. And maybe that's just because of my proximity and that I've been fortunate enough to get to know and meet and work with a lot of those folks. But I also feel like WWE has become at times a little predictable. And I also know that the WWE is catering to a different audience. You know, I'll never forget, gosh, at this point, it's several years ago, but when Naomi won the women's title and she put the little LED lights around it, and it was like her glow belt, if you will, not the organization, but you know what I mean. And
yeah.
I just thought to myself, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, because I like traditional wrestling championships, but I'm watching with my daughter, and my daughter at the time was a huge wrestling fan. She's like, oh my God, Dad, that's the coolest belt ever. And it clicked. You know what? This is a modern $1 million belt. Like, I'm sure as a kid, I mean, I remember the $1 million belt first debuting and me thinking, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, I love the $1 million championship. And I'm sure my dad thought, a fake diamond encrusted dollar bill sign, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So I realized I had like a dad moment where it was like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't dumb. It's just not for me. It's for her, because she loved it. And I think a lot of times with WWE, and for that matter, with AEW or Impact or Ring of Honor or any wrestling that I'm watching, I will find something on the show that, hey, that's not for me, but I don't dwell on it. I don't take to Twitter and talk about it. I don't try to spike the ball on anybody. You know what I do? I pick up my remote control and I just fast forward, and I find the segment that I enjoy. And I don't find myself usually watching wrestling live. But you know, I really like that FX show, American Crime Story or whatever it's called. I think this year they're doing, it's called Impeachment, and it's about the whole Clinton Lewinsky thing. I don't watch that show live. Like, you know, it's an hour long show. I'll tune in about halfway through, and then that way I'll get to skip the commercials. I too hate commercials, boys and girls. And I realize that I'm that guy, right? But I don't fuss about it. I just record it and enjoy it that way. But I do the same thing with my wrestling consumption. So there's a lot of times where I won't love something, or I won't like the performers, or I won't like the segment, and I'll just fast forward. So I don't get too tore up in it, but I do think the quote unquote tribalism of it's us versus them is a little silly. Like, to me, it's a battle of good content versus bad content. I want the good content and I want to fast forward the bad content, and bad is and good and bad, and even in that, a relative, it's up to me. Like, you know, my buddy up the road, Dave Milliken, he absolutely loves everything Memphis ever did, but I'm sure there's some stuff I would turn on modern wrestling, and he'd say, oh, look at this silliness, buddy. You just watched a tar and feather match the other day. Like, right. You know, it's all perspective of, right. And it's just opinion. So I think a little bit of it is silly. I don't think you have to pick a side. I want to watch it all, and I want to find the good parts, and then I want to skip the bad parts. That's pretty much it.
It feels like when I go on Twitter, it's like me when I was 12 years old, when I was a WWF loyalist as a kid, and anyone I saw wearing a Goldberg shirt or an NWO shirt as a kid, I was like, no, you're hurting you're hurting my friends. You're hurting Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Razor and Diesel. But that was me when I was 12.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be on Twitter acting like you're 12, going a little crazy over, did you see that we won this quarter hour and so on? I think even Bruce and Eric Bischoff have poked holes in the ratings in the Attitude Era, where they're saying it wasn't 8 million people watching us and 8 million watching you. It was everyone swapping back and forth at the same time. So then suddenly the Nielsen ratings get counted twice. But
again, you know, that's two things. One, I do think some of the tribalism is kind of fun. I think it's silly when people get upset about it, but I live in Alabama. And so down here, it is 24/7 college football. And when you introduce yourself in Alabama and you say, hey, nice to meet you, they say, especially when you're a younger person, what's your name? Where are you from? Who do you pull for? And your answer around these parts is usually Alabama, Auburn, or Tennessee, or you're weird and you're not from here and it's, you know, Marshall or something. But by and large, it's one of those three. And so I understand. And you see that, by the way, online, people having that same sort of debate. Oh, Alabama's overrated. Oh, Nick Saban's a cheater. Oh, Auburn's got their number this year or what have you. But the same thing exists in the NFL. There are diehard Eagles fans who hate the Cowboys, and there are diehard Giants fans who hate the Cowboys, and there are Cowboys fans who hate everybody in the East. So that, to me, this is like the wrestling equivalent. They're just pulling for their team, and they may say they hate it, but guess what? A lot of them still watch it. Yep. And that's the thing that gets me, is when they're like, man, I hate WWE. I would never watch it. Like this past Monday, wait a minute, you just said you hate it and you would never watch it. Yeah. So you're a football fan, but you're a Cowboys fan, and you're a football fan, but you're an Alabama fan. And I think that's the same thing. And I'm all for that. But as far as the ratings go, what was the highest rated episode of The Sopranos?
I don't know. I'm guessing the millions, obviously.
what was your favorite TV show of all time? Like, what's your favorite show?
My favorite show of all time was probably Lost at the time.
Okay. And the main character, how many years was his contract? Do you know?
He was on the show at least for 6 seasons. That's how long it lasted.
And how much did he make per episode? Do you know?
I do not know.
That's my point. In wrestling, we want to know what everybody makes, how many dates, what their downside was, what were the quarter hours, what was the demo. You don't know any of that for Lost.
No.
I don't know any of that for The Sopranos. That was my favorite show. I have no idea how much James Gandolfini made. I have no idea how many dollars were generated for HBO. I don't know what the ratings were. I don't know what the cost for the episodes were. But as wrestling fans, all of a sudden, everybody's become a business guru, and it's become a competitive conversation. I didn't need to know that The Sopranos was number one in the ratings in order for me to enjoy it. I just watched that impeachment show last night as you and I are recording. I love that show. Guess what I'm not doing today? I'm not curious about the overnight ratings. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't have to pull for the number one more successful show, but I do think that some of the way people talk about college football or the NFL, now that's become their metric for winning. And so, you know, it might be, well, you know, I know Alabama scored more points, but Auburn had more turnovers or what have you. And so there is a way where somebody can still say, I'm justifying my fandom and here's why. Right. And I think that's okay, but I do think it should never impede your enjoyment of a product. Like, you know, I'm an Alabama fan, whether we win or lose. And lately that's been easy because we've won a lot. But I mean, I remember being a season ticket holder when Shula was our coach, and we got beat by enhancement talent, if you will, at home, but I was still there and excited to be there. And I'll see you next Saturday. Of course. It didn't affect my enjoyment. And so I approach wrestling almost like a college football fan. I'm here to watch it all, and I'm going to enjoy it all, and I'm going to miss it when it's not here.
Yes. I always say, when people are like, oh, the WWE is the worst it's ever been, the worst ratings on Raw ever, I'm like, did you watch Giant Gonzalez? Did you watch Mantar? TL Hopper? No, you weren't there. So you think it was bad? You think things are bad? No. They're not bad. Let's move on, because I could talk to you forever about this. Now, I've talked to you before as my alter ego, Teddy Turnbuckle, a green puppet, and I asked you a question, but maybe it's changed. If you could travel to any WWE past event, which one would it be?
WrestleMania 6.
Your answer was the same.
Yeah. WrestleMania 6. That's the WrestleMania of my lifetime. Like, peak fandom as a kid. Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior. That was probably as good as it got for me as a kid. Don't get me wrong. I love, you know, WrestleMania 17, like everybody else, but WrestleMania 5 was unbelievable. And WrestleMania 6 was probably my peak fandom. So 6 would be my first choice. 5 would be my second choice. And I'd have to think after that, but okay. Those are my two automatic go-tos, WrestleMania 5 or 6.
Currently, who is your favorite WWE superstar?
Charlotte Flair, duh.
Do you have to say that? Is there someone on the side holding Bruce Pritchard's gun?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's Bruce Pritchard's gun, but...
It's Jeff Jarrett with his pistol, I forgot.
That's exactly right. Charlotte's my favorite. And again, it's our real life relationship. You know, she and I talk few times a week, every week. And, I can't separate my personal relationship and friendship from my fandom sometimes. So I make it a point to never miss her segments. Don't get me wrong. I love a lot of the other stuff, that I'm seeing these days. I can find something good on every episode. So yeah, I enjoy every episode. I find something on every episode that I enjoy. I think Paul Heyman is arguably the best performer that they've got up there. I think, you know, just adding him to the Roman mix has been unbelievable. Not just for Roman, but for WWE. I've always loved Daniel Bryan. I was sad to see him go. I think Randy Orton's arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world. I think AJ Styles is still in that conversation. I know they've had him doing some different stuff creatively lately, but I think AJ Styles versus anybody automatically makes it a great match. I think there's a huge upside in a guy like Matt Riddle. I think Kevin Owens is criminally underrated, and I've been a fan of his before he was there, and I'll be a fan when he's not there. I mean, there's a Finn Balor. My goodness, you look at what that guy was doing before he came in, and then what he did in NXT and the creation of this demon character. And you can seemingly just turn that on or off, and it's a hit. And there's a lot of great stuff in WWE, but you know, it's not in fashion to say that. Oh, and Rhea Ripley and Bianca, boy, they've just come out of nowhere in more recent years. And all of a sudden they're at the tippy top of the heap. And I'm excited to see Bayley get back. I thought Bayley was having the best run of her career before she got injured. And I'm excited to see what's next for that. So there's a lot of good stuff there, but yeah, I'd be lying if I said my favorite performer was anybody other than Charlotte Flair.
Of course, I was going to say, I don't know if you're even allowed to say any other answer. It's just like you cover your mouth and you hear Charlotte Flair.
Yeah. Yeah.
One last question. Now, you mentioned earlier when you were younger, you know, you had a circle of wrestling friends. Everyone liked wrestling if you had a circle of friends. But now as you get older, is the same for me. I only have like two wrestling fans who I'm friends with, who I see face to face, who are my childhood friends, and then they're my Twitter friends and YouTube, whatever. But if you had to show a friend who does not watch professional wrestling one match to say, okay, here, watch this and you'll enjoy it. Do you have a match you think that could instantly make someone, oh, I like this?
Same answer every time. Halloween Havoc 1997, Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio. I think it's got something for everybody. You know, if that person is even remotely a superhero or Marvel fan, they'll love Rey Mysterio. If they're a Cirque du Soleil fan, they'll love Rey Mysterio. If they just like athletic competition, maybe they're, you know, they grew up in karate tournaments or wrestling tournaments or whatever, they're going to love that match. There's something for everybody. There's storytelling. It'll work for kids, adults, men, women, children, the whole thing. So Halloween Havoc 97, Ray and Eddie, that would be my recommendation for anybody and everybody.
It's, yeah, it's one of the, I think maybe it is Rey Mysterio's greatest match ever. I know he's had so many over the years with certain superstars, but yes, the Halloween Havoc. I was going to say in my brain, like to convince someone, I'm not saying this is the best match ever, but Taker versus Mankind, Hell in the Cell, King of the Ring 98. If you want to like blow someone's mind really quick. But wrestling, yes, Eddie and Ray 100% is part of that. But I think we've hit the end of this interview, Conrad. I thank you so much for talking about wrestling and AEW and WWE, your childhood, double stack VHS, WrestleMania 4 tapes, Jeff Jarrett controversies, Bruce Pritchard. So I thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity to talk and always appreciate the opportunity to brag about adfreeshows.com.